This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, Episode 10, for June 20th, 2005.
The time is now 2 a.m. in Bukava, Belgian Congo, the home of the Jungle Telegraph. We'd like to say hello to Ungat Unga Oomp and Mrs. Oomp and all the boys up at the transmitter.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a TWiTcast.
Wait a minute, I got to take a picture of Patrick, because this is rare that I get to do this. Actually, it's not that rare. I did it just two TWiTcasts ago, but it's fun to have you actually in person.
What is
in
that?
Studio.
In studio. I almost said that, David. I almost said that. I'm going to take a picture.
You got a sidekick now?
Yeah, you didn't know I had a sidekick?
You go through phones like Kevin Rose goes through phones.
Yes, I do. And I'm going to get a picture of Patrick in the TWiT, doing the TWiT. All right. He's doing the TWiT, baby. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Episode 10, hard on the heels of Episode 9.
Well, it may actually hit the server before Episode 9.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know what's going on with our website. I apologize. I actually think I do know what's going on. I think it fell apart. It's saying it's full, but yeah. It's definitely not.
It started with the FTP server.
Yeah, I was doing that last week, and that's what that FTP problem was, and I should have paid attention.
So if twit.tv suddenly disappears, it's going to be because we need to rebuild the servers.
Right. And I don't know what I'm going to do anyway. I'm hoping that I can get this all fixed before I go to St. Petersburg.
What we are going to do is we have heard what you said. You want us to be on time rather than sounding like miraculous digital quality radio.
So the reason this sounds crappy
is because it's on time. It's raw, people.
What is that poster they put in the stores to say you could have it?
You have it good, cheap, or fast. Pick any two.
So this is good and fast. Yeah. Or no, it's cheap and fast.
When everybody else but Yoshi is up here, we'll be able to put Yoshi on an ISDN connection. Everybody else can sit around in a room and can tape.
Let me introduce the table mates, our TWiTcast for Episode 9. Patrick Norton, of course, you've already heard. He is up here at our TWiT offices. How do you like him? Pretty nice, huh?
It's gorgeous.
Spacious.
Podcasting live from Petaluma, California.
And, of course,
you can see butter and eggs in
from
the distance.
Southern California, Mr. Robert Herron. Hello, Robert. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad we could pry you away from Battlefield number 2.
I thought Robert's in Northern California.
The demo.
I'm sorry. Robert is in Northern California. You're in San Francisco.
I am.
All
East
right.
Bay.
In Southern California, David Prager.
For the time being, not too much longer. I think I might be back in San Francisco.
Former G4 employee. You're going to move up here with Kevin and Keith and everybody?
I don't think I'm going to live with them, but I'll probably move up kind of in accordance with them.
Good. That's great. So the last guy in L.A. will be Mr. Yoshi. Hey, Yoshi.
Yeah. Yes, I am the last one still down here.
Last man standing.
And he's not leaving because he's got a job, baby.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be leaving where I'm at. I'm going to be moving up towards Burbank, up that direction.
Oh, moving up north.
It's a little better than where I'm at now, that's for sure.
How is the job? You enjoying it?
Oh, I'm loving it. It's great.
Special effects company.
Yeah, Gentle Giant Digital. We do 3D scans.
That's really cool. So you've been on the job a week now.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get the training, and now are you deep into the work, or are you still learning how to use all the equipment?
I'm still getting more training. I've already gone out on location. I can't say what we did, but it was for Spider-Man 3. So,
see, this is cool. Now we've got an inside track into the Hollywood.
Yeah, but he'll get fired if he tells us anything useful that we talk about in the podcast.
All right. Missing in action this week, Kevin Rose. Don't know what happened.
Rose has a...
He's getting busy is what happened. Okay, we won't say anything.
Kevin has a previous engagement.
A little too busy for us, apparently.
Well, you know.
But that's okay. No, we're at our limit anyway, so that's fine. So, I guess we should get down to brass tacks, ladies and gentlemen, which is the stories of the day. Yoshi, you had some interesting stuff you wanted to talk about.
I sent a whole bunch. I don't know which ones
like. Well, let's talk about this this new PSP firmware.
Well, basically, after the 1.0 firmware, Sony fixed it, so a lot of the cool mods that we'd seen, we couldn't do, like the emulators, like the memory stick mod, and now they've found the way around that in version 1.5, but some of the new games coming out will update your firmware. So
now I was looking at the Make was it? Yeah, I think it was Make. Phil Terone was talking about what it took to hack it. It takes two memory sticks. You put a loader on one. You put the game on the other. I mean, it's the most complicated workaround I've ever seen. Have you tried it?
I haven't done it yet. I was just reading this morning. There's a Japanese guy that figured out how to do it without having to swap the memory sticks.
Oh, hallelujah! That was kind of nutty. Yeah. I mean, that was just way too much work. And then, you know, at the end of it, he says, "And now, look, you can play chess." It's like, good. I just hacked my PSP at a great cost and time to play chess.
Well, what you can do is you can put a MAME emulator on there. And
that I like.
MAME games I have, you have, but I've got a lot.
That I like. That would be really cool. How big is the MAME emulator? Will it fit on one memory stick?
Oh, yeah. You put like a 1 gig memory stick in there. You could put a couple thousand MAME games on there.
Wouldn't that be cool? Play Galaxian on your PSP.
Should we point out that for anybody who hasn't seen a newspaper in the last, you know, few months, that the PSP is the PlayStation Portable. It's a small handheld. It's extremely popular, and hacking it has been the objective of several thousand people who haven't left their house since it shipped.
You know, it's kind of it's funny because it was the big story, and then Xbox 360 and PS3 hit the newsstands, and people just kind of forgotten about the PSP, except for the hackers,
right?
I mean, I haven't bought a new game for it since I bought it originally.
Has anybody actually bought one of those little movies they're selling?
It comes with Spider-Man 2.
Okay. The UMD?
Yeah, the UMD.
They just have said that they're not going to try and fight the fact that there's going to be a lot of porn coming out on UMDs. Did you hear that?
Well, there's already some coming out in Japan.
Yeah.
Why would you... I'm sorry, I'm missing the point. Why would you want a handheld device with porn?
You don't remember being 14, do you?
Oh, that's right. Okay. I must be missing something. Somebody did a PSP mod on
you. Bringing the laptop into the bathroom, right?
Oh, I get it now. I get it now. So somebody on your website did what? Put an iTrip on a PSP?
They put an iTrip inside their PSP, and it's controllable through the interface to select the frequency. It's really slick mod. So you can just take that into your car and listen to your music.
Oh, I get it.
Just said you might have to hold it really close to the antenna on the car.
It's so slick. I'll put a link in the show notes to this mod. It looks really cool, and you can't tell it's in there. Mm-mm. Once he closes it up.
He's got a little piece on the outside where the crystal has stuck through the case just a little bit, and you can see the backside of the crystal. That's it.
Oh, that's not bad.
No,
that's a pretty gutsy move to hack your $250 portable that soon.
I thought so too.
Good mod, very cool. The pictures remind me of some pictures I saw on the net this week of a hoax website where a guy was claiming that Dell laptops had a keystroke logger in it. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, I saw the article about that. That was funny.
Yeah, the guy. Oh my! You know, I had to open up my brand new Dell laptop to fix the PC card riser, and look what was attached to the keyboard, man. And there's a picture of a chip. And he said, I did some research on this chip, and this is a keystroke logger and hardware keystroke with a megabyte of storage. And I think a lot of people bought it because I got a ton of email from people saying, oh, have you heard Dell's logging our keystrokes? And of course, it's not true. In fact, Engadget had found where the pictures came from originally.
Oh, funny.
So even the pictures were stolen. And Engadget pointed out, I think quite rightly so, that you don't see a lot of twist ties inside laptops these days.
No.
So don't worry. Dell isn't spying on you. And if they are, they're not using the keystroke logger. They're using that software they put on your system anyway.
Oh, man. Well, I used to have a professor in high school, a teacher in high school. And every so often she'd look at us. She was really funny. She's just crazed English teacher. She'd be like, you know, let's start a rumor today. What do you want to do? It's going to snow this afternoon. That there's been a problem with the water supply and everybody's going home. Who's got a rumor? Somebody would come up with a rumor, and then all 30 of us would like immediately buy into this and tell everyone we ran into. Dude, did you hear? And she's like, so you're going to see how long it takes to get back to you after it goes all the way around
the school.
What a great lesson.
That's a very valuable lesson. I wish they'd teach that more often.
So we should start a rumor right now.
Oh, okay.
Who's got a rumor?
Prager, you're good at this kind of thing. Think of something that we can spread, a rumor that we can spread.
Oh,
I know. Microsoft's buying the assets of Tech TV. Mm-hmm. They've got the name, the screensavers.
Actually,
they've
this one was already done.
Oh, shoot. That's right.
All right. We'll get back to this later.
That was a bad rumor. Oh. People still ask me about that.
So Microsoft bought Tech TV, huh? How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Has anybody been contacted by Microsoft?
Nope.
No.
Oh, good.
No. I think they would call us first, don't you?
Well, I don't hope so.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Oh, man. Is anybody catch up in the credit card breach? 40 million MasterCard accounts.
Oh, dear.
So,
whatever happened to MasterCard?
Oh, they're still out there.
Are there? Does anybody have a MasterCard? Everybody has a Visa, right? Nobody has a MasterCard.
Who knows? All I know
is... It's like a diner's club.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I could see Heron carrying a diner's club.
I do have my Chase Manhattan card.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a diner's club card?
No.
I have. Very rare.
You know what I have seen that is even rarer? Have you ever seen the black American Express card?
Platinum.
Yes.
There's a black card, and there are very few of them.
And there's no limit on it. If you have a black card, you can ask, you have your own representative, and you can pretty much call them like a concierge and say, this is what I want.
I would like to buy Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, it's more than no limit. I mean, there's all sorts. They call it, is it the Centurion?
Hey, this isn't a rumor you're starting, is it?
Shh. You've heard of black helicopters? How about the black American Express card? Very hard to get. Only the best, biggest names can get it. I have a friend who has one, and it's, you know, what's cool is you flash it. The problem is a lot of people don't take it.
Hey, I'm up on Snopes.com.
Yeah,
claim,
I just saw it.
American Express issues a special black card that allows its holders to buy anything. Status.
Yeah.
True.
True.
True. You can buy anything. There's no limit. You could buy a jet. You could buy a corporate jet on the thing.
Oh,
and they
so
just,
funny.
You know, they, if you have a black card, you're good for it.
It's called the Centurion.
Yep. Yep. So, and I know it's true because I've been at a meal paid for by the black card. So I've seen it. But you kind of wonder if you flash one of those. I mean, how many waiters have seen a black American Express card?
Funny.
You know, I know, Patrick, you're no fan of PayPal.
Oh.
Had we ever worked that out, by the way?
We'll discuss that later. But
okay. I'm trying to send him money.
Did you see that email? So you go, who here has a PayPal account?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
I do, too.
If you use eBay, you have to have a PayPal account.
Well, I haven't had a PayPal account in years, and I've created a new PayPal account, and it's amazing, like, all the... You used to have to do, like, 2 out of 3 things to establish your identity, like, if you wanted to withdraw more than $500 a month. Now you have to do all 3 things. So basically, it's been funny. I've opened up a new bank account, so I don't want my PayPal account attached to
a real account
to my main account because a bunch of people I used to be in a ski house with got hacked.
Yeah, and I think that's better now.
I think it's a lot better now. But it's been amazing to like go through. It's like, okay, so I had an account. I would just occasionally, you know, use a credit card with that, my black American Express card.
You should have
to
one.
Pay for my $45, you know, Buffy the...
Yeah, you don't want to use that at a Burger King.
This isn't real, dude.
Didn't you hear that Google's going to come out with their own payment online payment service?
That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Wow.
Wouldn't that be... I mean, this is how we accept donations right now, is through PayPal.
Right.
The nice thing is you don't have to have a PayPal account to make a donation.
Right.
You can use a credit card.
Right.
But people still are a little skittish about PayPal. Yeah. I understand. After all the bad stuff that did happen, I think they're better now. In fact, I never verified my account. You know, to verify it, you give them your bank account number, then they make 2 tiny deposits, like a 4-cent and an 8-cent deposit. Then you have to tell them how big the deposits were. And that verifies that it's actually
your
account.
Well, there's a bunch of stuff you can't do without verifying the account.
Right. They get, I mean,
the limits
get on
the account.
Yeah, they get on you, and they say, why haven't you verified? So finally I verified because we were doing this, and we were taking quite a bit of money in on the donations.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough, by the way, for you not to donate.
Considering we think we may have killed 2 servers.
we're kind of desperate at this point for money. So, but people have said, you know, I don't want to, you know, use PayPal, and we haven't yet got it set up so that you can send us checks because I want to get the LLC done. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll do that this week, Patrick. Patrick's really on me to do this because he's, you know, Patrick's got a business mind. Many people don't know this about Patrick.
No, Patrick's terrified of being sued and at an LLC.
Oh, yeah. Don't say anything, guys. Nope. Everything's wonderful.
I was raised by business people and wolves. I have my paranoia and I've earned it.
So, and then people, I understand, don't want to use PayPal. I think that's kept some people from donating. So this Google thing, we'll certainly sign up for it right away. Everybody trusts Google.
Well, how could you not? They have all of our information already.
Why do we trust them so much? What is it about Google?
Well, it's the same way like entire generation. I mean, who here doesn't love McDonald's? deep down in your greasy little heart, McDonald's. Who doesn't love McDonald's? I mean, we may avoid it now that we're in our 20s and 30s.
You love McDonald's, don't you, Yoshi?
Actually, the only thing I really like from them anymore is their fries.
Yeah. But I mean,
I really like their fries, though.
Julia Child said McDonald's fries are the best fries ever.
Yeah.
Wasn't your first job at McDonald's, Leo?
Yes. I was, in high school.
In Santa Cruz.
Wendy's fries are pretty good.
No, Wendy's fries don't even come close. Why? Yeah. How can you say that? They're soggy.
They're delicious.
In-N-Out burger fries.
Any food that's cooked right. If you have food being cooked by teenagers who don't care, it's not going
to
taste good.
No. That's why you have to go to In-N-Out burger, where it's food cooked by teenagers that love their job.
But the key with McDonald's is they have it so mechanized that you can't screw up. You know, it's all
buttons.
Well,
you can, but you have to
work hard. Yeah, you have to be good at it. The other thing is, the key is lard, baby. But they stopped using lard because, for vegetarians. Yeah, and health concerns. Uh-huh. So now they, if you read Fast Food Nation, if Kevin were here, he would tell us about this. Yeah.
Kevin would be horrified at this entire conversation.
We can only have junk food conversations while Kevin's not here. They go to a place in New Jersey where they get beef flavoring. There's no beef in it. It's a chemical that tastes like beef, and they put that in there to give you some of that lard flavor.
That tallow action.
Tallow action, baby.
Which actually...
Vegans take that.
So who here is actually running automated Windows updates on their system
right
now?
I did. And I got it at Tuesday.
It's amazing.
Every system I touch.
Yeah.
Don't you think you have to?
I think it's...
Of course.
I like to at least see what they're updating, so I have an idea what they're patching before I update them.
On this rebuilt machine, I forgot that I had it on, and... you don't even, it's on Service Pack 2, you don't even get that the balloon anymore.
Right.
It's just when you click shutdown, it says, if you restart, we'll install the updates.
Everybody trust Service Pack 2 at this point? Even I have actually installed Service Pack 2 on most of my systems, all but one.
I had my first blue screen on Sunday last week with a Service Pack 2.
But you were installing and things are going horribly wrong.
Well, this has been the week from hell. I mean, everything's gone wrong now. Now our server's dead. So I
power supplies. I'm telling you.
But the Macintosh
struggled with the system for 2 weeks, and it turned out to be just a bad power supply.
That's the worst feeling. You didn't stick a piece of steel in the power supply to quiet it down, did you?
No, I did not.
So there was like a pop and some smoke.
But I applied Service Pack 2 on the system I finished building, and it was smooth and works great.
It actually helped out with the Wi-Fi on the notebook I have when I installed Service Pack 2. It's just the code's so much cleaner and the interface is so much easier to use. Of course, I'm run between 32 different Wi-Fi access points all the time.
I have to say, this new system that I built is with Service Pack 2 and all the updates is actually, I think Service Pack 2, if you can get it installed, mm-hmm. is a big improvement.
Yeah,
I mean, it just prevents a lot of problems. It's really a must-have.
And remember, you can download it as a standalone update as well. It's a couple hundred megs or something.
Yeah, that's what I do. I have a CD with the release Service Pack 2. Now, here's the question, Robert. I downloaded that when it first was released. I wonder if it's been changed. You think they've slipstreamed any changes in there?
Oh, of course. So as soon as I just, like I said, I finished building that system. As soon as Service Pack 2 is on, you go back to the internet, and there's, if you do, say, .NET.
Well, I understand that.
A separate Service Pack update.
But I wonder, do you think... they've snuck modifications into Service Pack, into the actual Service Pack 2 download. In other words, should I update my CD of Service Pack 2?
the download itself.
Yeah.
No, I think that stays static.
You don't think they've slipstreamed anything? They've slipstreamed stuff in the past into. Mm-hmm.
Hope they do. It'd be nice if they did, but I'm not. That's such a big download.
Yeah.
I really only worry about it when I'm rebuilding. Yeah. I'll just download it fresh.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Well, isn't Service Pack 2 really just a massive batch file of all the original updates from XP when it came out, kind of?
No. It changes the security. For instance, it changes the My Computer zone, mm-hmm. so it's a completely secure zone, which it never was before. I mean, it changes behavior as well as patching holes. I mean, it's a big, big shift. In fact, I've been talking to Steve Gibson, and there's stuff in there that nobody ever announced in Service Pack mm-hmm. 2 that he's starting to see. They, raw sockets is gone,
Really?
Yeah. They turned it off. Yeah. They didn't announce that.
Should you explain what raw sockets is and why it was terrifying everybody?
Well, this was something Steve Gibson was I wish they really ought to send Steve an apology. Because Steve Gibson, when he found out about it, was rattling every cage, and Microsoft was poo-pooing it right and left. So here's the deal. And by the way, raw sockets are part of Linux. And almost all Unix operating systems, if you run as administrator. And what it is, it's the ability to generate IP packets with spoofed originating addresses. And why is that bad? Well, because a hacker, normally when a hacker does a DOS attack, they all come from the same IP address. Mm-hmm. If you can randomize the IP address for each packet, there's no way for a router to block it. You can't just say, well, I don't want to see any more packets from that guy. Because who is it? It's coming from all over. Now, this is something that Unix has had for a long time. The point that Steve was making is, yeah, it's fine if you're an administrator and you're running Unix and you presumably know what you're doing. But to build this into a consumer operating system and to make it part of the operating system and the capability there is asking for trouble, because hackers will co-opt home systems that have raw socket capabilities, and suddenly they can do distributed denial of service attacks that cannot be stopped because all the originating IP addresses are spoofed or random. And he was just, he met with Microsoft, and Microsoft poo-pooed it. They denied it. They said, no problem. This was more than a year ago. It was when XP came out. So it was 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. Just now, they finally turned it off. And why? Because there have been massive distributed, nobody's talking about it, but there have been massive distributed denial of services attacks using raw sockets that have been really problematic. And finally, Microsoft's saying, oh, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have put that in. They put it in because it's a checkbox. Once again, it's that feature checkbox. Unix has it. We have to have it. Anyway, so that's something that nobody announced, but it is turned off in Service Pack 2, and that's a big change. But I have a hell of a time getting normal users to do it. Mm-hmm. Most of the people will call the radio show and say, no, I'll never install Service Pack 2. I'm Service Pack 1. I haven't done an update in a couple of years because every time I do an update, it breaks Windows. I had somebody call me and say, I want you to kind of tell me about my security. Now, here's the whole thing. I've got McAfee antivirus, and I've got Zone Alarm. He's telling me all the security stuff. And he says, but I said, what version of Windows? Service Pack 1? I haven't applied an update since Service Pack 1 because I don't trust him.
Which I understand the not trusting, but you know what? It pains me to say this, but it's very scary at this point to not run the updates. Because if there's no actual exploits in the wild of whatever the update is patching, there will be as soon as it hits the street.
Well, and the guy could have every security program in the world, but if he's got big holes like that, forget it. The first thing these Trojans do is they turn off your antivirus and your firewall. They just
let alone the holes in Internet Explorer, which is likely going to be the source of where the problem is going to come from.
Absolutely. Yeah. You'll surf to a site and there'll be an RPC decom exploit and they're on your system and you're dead. So it's a fool's paradise. But how do you convince them when people blue screens like crazy?
Mm-mm-mm. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't.
Well, hopefully most people have their automatic updates turned on.
Turning them on, folks. And if
there's no reason not to.
And if it crashes your system, it's not our fault. We didn't mean to do it.
Actually, the system rollback tool works pretty well.
Yeah, if you can boot. It's not unusual to install Service Pack 2 and be dead.
Well, there you have it. Back up everything.
Might be that time to format the whole PC and do it clean.
Yeah. I think it works pretty well in that case. Although, like I said, I had my first blue screen of death and a clean install last week. But I think, that was just chance. And I went back and I did it again and it worked fine. So,
chipset drivers, video drivers, everything's important.
Yeah, and that's the problem with a Windows system is you don't know what you got. Any other big stories before we go to our questions? We're going to do questions this week.
Cool.
Any other stories you guys want to talk about?
I got the greatest non-tech story that blows me away.
What is it?
A 14-year-old boy broke into a tiny airport and stole a Cessna airplane that he'd never flown before. He flew it for 30 minutes and landed it successfully and got arrested.
Had he been using Microsoft Flight Simulator?
Probably.
See, there's a tech angle. Wow.
Yeah. I found it on Dig, so that's about as close as a tech I can get angle. Into it.
There's your tech angle right there.
Dig.com, a fine source of stories.
And we should give credit to Kevin Rose, who did a great job with Dig. Hey, by the way, watch the news next week. I think we'll be part of a fairly large announcement.
Really?
We're finally getting our ducks in a row now that my server's completely collapsed, now that we've brought it to its knees. And I think really it's just the traffic. It's the amount of traffic that's been suffering. It hurts.
Which we'd like to thank you all.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
But
we just did. Well, no, I'm not complaining by any means. We just did. We had no idea. No idea. I mean, even on our media, which is one of the places I've been putting the file, 14,000 downloads an episode just on that one. And that's one of dozens of mirrors and, of course, our own site. I would say we're probably up to 200,000 downloads a week now. And everywhere I go, people say love Twit. Haven't you experienced that?
You know, I haven't traveled to any truck stops in the middle of nowhere. So as soon as I do, I'll probably get that.
Everywhere I go, it's kind of amazing. The response. So it looks like we're going to have distribution from at least one, maybe two sources. Well, we'll announce, I think we're going to get actual distribution next week from one big guy. And then I think we're going to have a big announcement. They've asked me if I'd participate in the rollout announcement of a big service. So
cool.
We'll have a couple of big, watch for next week's announcements, which with any luck will solve a lot of the bandwidth issues. All right, let's get to our questions. My friends, my twits, are you ready? Listen up.
Hi, guys. This is Kat. I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan, the Detroit, Michigan area. And my question is, I'm interested in getting started in the voiceover business, but I'm not able to install ISDN in my home right now. I understand that there's a new software product, I believe, which combined with some hardware products will allow you to have some high-quality audio recording as you connect to a studio. Have you heard anything about that? Do you know what I'm talking about? Am I making any sense at all?
Yes, Kat.
Thanks.
You are.
Bye.
Thank you, Kat. They record albums this way all the time now.
Really?
With T1s. Mm-hmm. You have to have a fairly hefty connection.
Well, that's not more than a few hundred a month.
A few thousand.
So what would be the difference then between, say, a T1 line and... Why ISDN, though, for audio?
Well, I use ISDN for the radio show, and it's very simple. It's point-to-point. There's no latency. It's not a bandwidth issue. For the radio show to give me full fidelity voice on a radio station, I only need 64 kilobits using AAC. So we have boxes on either end that are very fast DSPs that do the AAC in real time. So they can code it. And 64 kilobit AAC is CD quality for a mono voice. Perfectly adequate.
Overkill for voice.
Yeah, it's perfectly adequate. Yeah, I could send music down the line. If I want to do stereo, I could use both channels of the ISDN, but we only need one channel. But the point is, I get a consistent 64 kilobits. It's never, you know, there's no lag, there's no latency. Packets come in order because it's a point-to-point connection. And that's why they use ISDN. My DSL is 10 times the bandwidth, but it's not guaranteed.
Right.
So that's why when they do these albums, and they do albums this way all the time now, coast to coast, they use leased lines. They use T1 lines. So they have guaranteed quality of service. It's not the public internet. And I don't think there's any way over the public internet that you could do live that would be guaranteed to sound good.
Right. So that would be she needs to move to somewhere she can get ISDN.
Well, I'm surprised she can't. If you can get a phone line, you can almost always get ISDN.
Yeah. It's really unusual that I'd be able to get ISDN.
Yeah. I would just – what's hard is it's hard to get it. Because the phone company doesn't want to do, they want to get rid of their ISDN switches. Right. They don't like it. It's a whole box they have to have in there, and they don't want to have an ISDN.
Well, it's a whole box they have to have in there. It's also it's bandwidth they have to guarantee. Therefore, right. it basically takes over for some regular analog.
Well,
box,
it comes
box.
Over. It comes over the copper pair. I think it probably. I don't know if it needs more.
Well, there's a ratio they can use. There's a certain amount of. Bandwidth, they can guarantee a certain number of analog lines per copper
got
line.
It. I see.
Right, and then they are a significant lower number of ISDN lines.
So they have to be careful if they. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Because if everybody with an ISDN modem got on at the same time,
a problem.
Yeah.
Well, we're two blocks from the central office here. In fact, I get great DSL for the same reason.
Nice.
Thank you for the call, Kat. Let's get another question.
Hey, Leo. This is Marcus from Marblehead, Massachusetts. Blurb that you have up on your website, the first podcast of the week is the last word in tech. You should put week up on the same line, and then with a comma, it'll read a lot better and look a lot nicer on the site. So it should be your first podcast of the week, comma, on one line, and then the next line is the last word in tech. It'll just read a lot better and look good on your site. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you.
Actually, we should kill the is, too. Your first podcast of the week.
The last word in tech.
And you should capitalize the Y in your, I think.
Guys, I'm just trying to get the thing up.
More hamsters, Captain.
We're lucky you can log in. Worrying about punctuation, I don't know.
Hi, guys. This is Sheila in Tri-Cities, Washington. And thanks to my coworker, Jose Miguel, I get to listen to you guys via CDs after he's done listening to you.
Aww.
And at one time you were inquiring, what should you call your listeners? I suggest you call them the Twitters. Hey, keep going and good luck with everything you do. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Twitters. Patrick likes twit heads.
Twit army.
Twit army.
Yeah.
I like that.
That way we've got some oomph.
Yeah, the twit army. Twit heads
is good. Sounds cool.
Free upgrades or the twit army will camp in Redmond.
All right, I am logging into the site now to change the punctuation on our
if the server goes down, folks, you'll know why.
Hi, my name is Philip Call, and I'm listening in from Penang, Malaysia.
Wow.
Neat. My question is, what do you guys do with your broadband connections? I find it hard not to shell out more money for quality content nowadays. Any recommendations to really good free stuff that I could download? Thanks.
There's this thing called Napster.
No.
Kazaa. Free stuff.
Oh, boy.
Let's go round the horn here. David Prager, you're a scammer.
You know what? Honestly, I download a lot of video content on BitTorrent. Other than that, I mean, I surf the web, and I like doing it really fast. But
it's nice just to be able to surf.
Yeah. Extremely quickly.
I'll tell you one thing. This Skype that we're doing mm-hmm. is a good example. Now, this is the first time we've used this on my new DSL connection, mm-hmm. which has much better upstream. And, you know, it's working better, isn't it?
Well, they say Skype says you want to host a Skype conference like this. You want it on the fastest line, and you want it on the fastest system running it on the fastest line you have.
Dual G5s on a 768 up, 5 megabit down DSL.
I'd say that's the fastest line any of us has access to.
It's a pretty good setup.
Yeah.
I think, and it's, you know, it sounds good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have to edit this one, guys. Unless somebody says strip club.
You know, you should see the tear coming strip out glitter. Of Leah's eye.
I want to edit it. See, I can't even get into the admin page to fix the punctuation.
Safari can't open the page.
Hi, guys. This is Mark Swain from Valencia, California. And it's great that you guys are broadcasting again because I went through a lot of withdrawals a few years ago. And I'm sure a lot of other people did, too, when Tech TV went off the air. So it's great to hear you guys again. I have a question for you. It's about the Marantz digital audio recorders. I've been thinking about getting one of these for a little while now. Because my microphone is rather close to my Power Mac G5, and when those 9 fans or whatever, how many fans are in that computer, turn on, it sounds like a jet airline about to take off right next to me. So I thought solid state would be a little quieter. So anyway, if you have any insight on either of the PMD-660, which is a little handheld, or the PMD-671, which is the 24-bit version, that'd be great. Thanks. Keep up the great show.
I should mention that Mark has been on the Screensavers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can say who he works for. I think he always wanted to make that anonymous, but it's a big media company in the Southland.
He does some cool stuff.
Yeah, really neat. Nice to hear from you, Mark.
There's two basic differences between those Marantz recorders he was mentioning. So for those of you who aren't tuned into that, we use Marantz recorders, digital recorders, as portable units and as our local units when we're doing multi-track, when we're creating multi-tracks and for field units.
And we're using it right now to record this.
Exactly. So the larger unit, which is considerably more expensive, has about 42,000 different compression options.
Yeah, look at the buttons on
yeah. And the biggest difference is the more portable unit, which is about half the size of the 660, is essentially it offers the WAV format or the PMD file. PMD, is that the right? I can never remember that one. What's a RAW?
PCM.
PCM. I can't remember PCM. And it offers a basic MP3 compression and nothing else.
The big one does MP2.
Right.
Which I thought, why do MPEG-2? It's not MPEG-2 video. It's MPEG Layer 2 as opposed to MPEG Layer 3. It's another form of compression. Turns out NPR uses MPEG Layer 2, MPEG 1 Layer 2, for all of its network stuff. And so I suggested we try it. And I tell you, the quality was terrible. I was very disappointed. MP3 is so much better. And we record this usually as WAV audio. I like these devices, don't you? Now, you have the little one. Yeah.
I mean, basically, either record it raw, which is, what was that?
Okay. Who turned off their phone?
That was mine. Tell me how it was.
It's so cute.
It's really cute. What's your ringtone, Yoshi?
There's work. No.
I just have the normal ringer. I'm actually trying to get a new phone because I am very unhappy with T-Mobile and my current phone.
Whenever I'm walking around and I hear somebody's phone go, you know, the old Nokia ring, I go, get a new ringtone.
Yeah. I don't know, but the 660 If you're just doing portable recording, the 660 is great. The 670 offers a whole bunch more compression formats.
Which you'll never use, probably.
Yeah, the 671, if you're like a taper, if you miss the days of sitting in the audience at a Grateful Dead show and trying to get perfect quality, then yeah, go for the 24-bit 96 kilohertz compression that it offers.
If you're a Nagra kind of guy.
If you're a Nagra kind of guy.
If you even know what Nagra is, you should probably get that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's frugal the 671. I bet that's really expensive.
I didn't know
it's
that was.
$1,000.
Wow.
That sounds like it's more for a studio environment.
Yeah, the 670 is like $600, and then the 660s that most of us are using, which offer the much limited options, are $499.
I think that's overpriced, frankly. I mean, what's in here? Not much, right? I mean, it's just...
Well, it's the quality of the DSP. I mean, it's certainly not for the incredibly sublime and easy to grok interface.
Yeah, not paying for the interface, baby. I know. Once I set it up, I never played with it again.
Yeah, because basically the 660 is like 128 kilobit stereo or 64 kilobit mono.
I don't think you need all those. I mean, all the other ones. If you can do uncompressed wave and you can do MP3, what else do you need? And frankly, because you don't have a big card yet, recording on MP3, I couldn't tell the difference. It sounded just as good as the waves. In fact, we should all just be recording MP3. I don't think it really matters.
Well, we'll work on that in the future.
No.
G'day, Twits. It's Lucky Phil from Sydney, Australia. I'll have a question about WiMAX. In the area of Sydney that I'm in, I can't get cable or DSL internet. However, I have a broadband connection through a service called iBurst. It's a variant of the 3G network, from what I can gather. It's based out of mobile phone towers. I find it's pretty fast. It's pretty reliable. And I can basically go anywhere in Sydney, bar a few pockets. And I have an always... on stable, steady net connection. It's also quite cheap considering I'm on a unlimited downloads plan for a set fee per month. I'd love to know why this service isn't being proposed or used in the States as opposed to the proposed WiMAX, which is being tested and experimented on, etc. I love the show you guys put on. I also love seeing Leo Laporte on the How To channel every night at 10:30. And keep up the great work.
Do you know that? I'm a star in Australia.
Sorry, I'm just thinking of Canadian Paul, who's an Australian friend of mine.
That's confusing.
Who's in Australia right now. It's really interesting. Actually, there's two companies that are really... I don't know if they're battling it out yet. I think they're both kind of... there's iBurst and Unwired in Australia. And it's interesting because my understanding was that iBurst was using a variation... Of kind of like a pre-WiMAX. And what they are doing is basically they've picked a whole bunch of cell towers and they're making it available. And then as the demand goes up, they're basically installing more of these transmitters on more of these towers. Mm-hmm. And Intel's really interested in that. And again, I'm not sure if it's iBurst or Unwired, but Intel's really interested because this is a model for how WiMAX could become financially popular. So WiMAX... You know, it's basically fixed WiMAX is going to come out in the United States at the end of this year, maybe beginning of 2006. The unwired version is going to be about a year after that. I would probably, you know, in the States, part of the problem is it's going to be interesting to watch because the cell companies have things so tied up here. A lot of people are saying 3G is just going to roll right over the top of WiMAX, and WiMAX is going to be popular in a few areas where, you know, cable and DSL either aren't there or just don't work well. Boy, and then I lost my train of thought.
They're lucky in Australia. They've got ADSL 2,
which
is, I think Big Pond is rolling that out, and that's great, too. What I love to see is the competition.
Yeah.
That's the key for me. I mean, I'm happy here. I'm getting great DSL service, and DSL providers upped the limit on DSL because they wanted to compete with cable modems. That's great, and I think you want to see more of that. What do you use, David? Are you DSL?
I use I still use my neighbors.
I knew that. I just testing you.
Well, you got EVDO on your Verizon phone, don't you, Prager?
Back when I was working at G4, we did a thing using the 3G solution on the CDMA.
On the Kite, right?
Yeah. It was great. The download speed. I mean, it was great compared to like any kind of dial up. I'm sure WiMAX would kick the crap out of it.
Hey, we never finished our free broadband stuff. So now I know one more free broadband thing that Prager does, which is steal it. I mean, borrow it.
Might be more than willing. I have no idea, though. I didn't ask.
You've never asked. What he doesn't know won't hurt him.
Yeah.
What are some free broadband things you like to do, Robert?
Well, just in terms of like sites to go, or maybe
yeah, I mean, this guy in Malaysia is getting high speed. What should he do right away? What's the first thing?
Download lots and lots of cool software. I mean,
that's true.
Open source software, SourceForge.net,
FreshMeat.net,
FreshMeat.net. Start looking at the open source projects, OpenOffice.org. If you don't want to spend money for Microsoft,
that's a nice
Office.
Way to install Linux.
Yeah, try out different Linux distros. Yeah, that's the best. Yeah.
Totally. And a nice large download.
I use the SUSE network boot, so it's a small download. You boot up, and then it downloads the stuff that you tell it to install, and that's a nice thing to do on broadband. To be able to, Gen 2 also will do that. Where
nice.
I think that's a great way to go. Bootstrap it up off broadband.
I believe.
And also, probably my favorite thing is using an application like Keyhole, or what is it? Keyhole.com.
Did it mean the maps?
Mm-hmm. We have real-time. Google just recently bought them out, and right. It's a free trial software, but it streams in real-time information, including maps and satellite pictures, over a virtual globe. You can just spin around with the mouse.
And it's data-rich, so you do need broadband to do that.
Definitely. Yeah. And if you have a good graphics card, it really helps, too, because it's amazing the level of detail you can scroll in and out of.
It's also amazing, I think, and I think about it here will agree, just being able to browse the web at broadband speeds, even for normal text pages. Yeah. This makes everything go so much faster. Well,
yeah, and latency.
It spoils you, too, because you don't ever want to go back.
Right.
Hey, that Battlefield 2 demo was 550 megs or however big it was. So, you know, enjoy those demos.
That's another one. Download video game demos. Play video games.
Play online.
Yeah, play online.
I like the not being frustrated with downloads. Personally, I hit a website. If it's not up within 10 seconds, I close the page.
Yeah. Yeah, we're spoiled. I think that really content is the key. I mean, podcasts, you aren't really practical on dial-up. You've got to have broadband to listen to podcast. I mean, video system, that kind of stuff, you can't do without broadband. And I think that's the future. We're going
to
get so much
multitasking too. Being able to download while you can continue to surf web pages.
Oh, you're right.
Like
yep. Or yeah. Skype while you're Skyping. I'm downloading right now.
I mean,
or six torrents going.
The modem is really limiting you to one task at a time online.
That's really true. Yeah.
Hello, Twits. My question is: have you tried to use Ventrilo to communicate over the internet? I play a lot of competitive games like Counter-Strike, and my clan uses it exclusively for voice communication.
My clan.
Yes.
I spend a lot of time in Dungeons and Dragons.
Hey, I have a clan.
I have a clan, too.
Oh, jeez. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. I'm sorry. It's just I'm too old.
It's a group of friends.
A clan is either a group of skinheads or it's a group of people who play online games as a team.
I got to be careful.
I'm going to go with
the latter.
Yeah, latter.
I got to be careful what I say. So Robert has a Ventrilo server. Is that your favorite? You were the one who taught me, turned me on to, what was the first?
Roger Wilco.
Roger Wilco, yeah.
Back in the day.
And that would allow you to talk to each other while you're doing online gaming, which really is important on team games like Counter-Strike.
And I believe the GameSpy group ended up purchasing the rights to Roger Wilco, and I'm sure they're bundling that with their stuff.
Is Ventrilo the best?
It's the one I've been using the longest. It seems to take up the least amount of overhead on the server side, and server apps are written in for practically every OS that's popular right now. The problem being is the client side, where it's only Windows.
Right.
But for gaming, I use it for every modern game out there with no problem whatsoever, and very good sound quality.
We played with TeamSpeak. We'll probably play with Ventrilo, but you know they're really not designed for what we do, which is kind of all talking together. They're designed for kind of one-off, you know. I'm killing you, kind of stuff.
Follow me.
Eat rocket, weasel.
Get in the tank, damn it.
I have a Linux box. This is the old dual processor server you were mocking me for last week, and I'm going to put. I've been in contact with the folks at Asterisk Digium,
ooh,
and I'm going to put Asterisk on here, which is a Linux open source PBX software,
basically a homebrew PBX.
Yeah. And they're sending me two cards, one that'll get it to the POTS line, and one that'll get it onto the internet. So once I get that set up, we're going to use this. We're going to try it anyway. Right. I think you could put higher quality codecs in there.
Right.
We're going to try it as a voice conferencing system for Twitter.
So we should point out, basically, you're about to become your own telephone system.
Yeah. And once I set it up, and we'll all have voicemail boxes on here, we could use it as a central system for all of us. And then you can use a SIP phone, a voice over internet interface, to plug in anywhere and go through this, and you'll be making a local call from here.
Oh, wow.
So this will be that's going to be something we're going to try out. I'm really interested in it. I have heard mixed opinions about whether it'll work for the TwitCast.
Right.
It's definitely a favorite of people for PBXs. I mean, it's amazing. Open source, Linux based. So I have SUSE on here. They said we like it if you put Debian, so I'm going to probably put Debian on it.
People are also using it to hack caller ID.
Oh, it's all sorts of things you can do with it. I mean, yeah, you have a PBX. and they're going to send me the hardware interface, so it'll interface out to the POTS system, which should be very handy. So Ventrilo, that's a good choice. I don't know if it's right for the TwitCast. Actually, Skype's been doing pretty. The only problem I have with Skype is we can only get 5 people on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that seems to be the problem with all of them we've tried so far, is that once you get past a certain number, 3 is fine. Yeah. 3, we've had very well duplexed conversations where you can talk over each other very well. But as soon as you get into 4 and 5 people, I think that's where a lot of it starts falling apart.
This is working much better than it's ever worked before right now, this Skype. Partly because Patrick's in studio, so there's only 4 of us on Skype. But it's working well. I think it's sounding good.
Good afternoon, you twits. Man, that sounds so mean, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Scott Whitlow from Indianapolis, Indiana. First of all, I got to say, love you guys' show. Listen to it all the time. My question is about a Linksys router that I have. I have a Linksys wireless router upstairs, and downstairs I have a PowerBook G4 that I use to connect, of course, wirelessly to the internet. However, from time to time, periodically, it just conks out on me. The internet connection does from the wireless router. The actual internet connection itself is still alive on the cable modem. I can also access to the desktop computer upstairs. However, my PowerBook does not connect to the internet anymore. I'm wondering what kind of steps I can take to avoid this situation. Once I unplug the router, plug it back in, it works fine again. So just give me some suggestions on where to start looking. Thanks a lot. Love you guys' show. Bye.
That was a problem on Windows, still is, with wireless zero config. And the easy to fix on Windows, it's a XP service. If you disable that service, what was happening is Microsoft thought, well, let's make it easier to join a Wi-Fi network. We'll put zero config in, so it'll just spy the network and join it transparently. Mm-hmm. The problem is, if there are other networks in the area, it starts to hunt.
Yeah.
And you lose it.
We had this problem in my neighborhood where there's, like, literally somewhere between 3 and 15 wireless networks going on, depending on what time of day it is.
Right. So it starts roaming. Mm-hmm. And you lose your connection. So on Windows, for sure, turn off wireless zero config. He said it was happening on a Mac. I've never had that. Apple's been pretty robust as far as keeping that's one of the things I like about my PowerBook, is I can get on any network and it'll just be rock solid. I'm not sure.
Update the firmware of that router first.
You think it's the router?
I've actually...
9 times out of 10, there's been another update for a fix that, there is always a fix for a router.
It's worth all. I mean, you should definitely I agree. Definitely update the router, but updating the router is probably not going to fix this particular one. Because especially on the Windows machines, it will hunt all day long.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
That's one nice thing about, at least on my IBM notebook and the tools that they provide. There's 2 utilities that they use together. One allows me to connect to turn the wireless on and off very easily, but the second one gives me all the wireless access points I've ever visited, and it only looks for those particular ones.
Right.
And I can connect to those in and out.
So you use the IBM. Everybody gets really 2, if you have SP2 anyway, XP-SP2, gets 2 Wi-Fi tools, one that provided by Windows and one provided by your chipset. And manufacturer, you like the IBM one.
Totally. It gives me location profiles, network profiles. It makes going between work, home, and whether I'm wired or wireless, it just handles it all very, very elegantly.
I think if you turn off, I mean, I've used the one in Windows XP forever.
That's pretty reliable.
Me too.
Yeah.
But turning off, I mean, basically go into services and change wireless zero config to manual and when it starts up, and that'll prevent it from automatically logging.
Is this, Patrick, I'm on the HP here. Is this Windows or is that the HP?
That's Windows.
That's
XP.
Windows. Yeah, I think it does a good job. Yeah. I've been happy with that.
And actually, you know what? I'll send to Leo. There's a really good web page that shows how to turn off wireless zero configuration.
Just go in services. It's pretty easy. But
hello, Leo and the Twit crew. My name is Matt Truxel, and my question to you is, how do you feel about BitTorrent being a distributor of spyware, and do you still advocate using it to download your program?
Hell yeah.
Okay, let's
hell
take
yeah.
it.
Hell
yeah. There's something.
Yeah, as the official paranoid in here, and as the person who actually has never downloaded MP3s or videos, you know, from any of this peer-to-peer sites, BitTorrent isn't a system for distributing spyware. Now, mean people will use it as a system for distributing spyware.
But it requires cooperation on your part. You've got to go out in there and take it.
Yes.
If you're only getting the TwitCast, you're not going to get spyware.
Well, it's really horrible, and I probably shouldn't say this out loud because there's going to be gasps all over the continental United States and apparently Penang, Malaysia, and Sydney, Australia. But if someone were to take, and this is one of the things that's interesting about using BitTorrent, they could take a copy of the TwitCast and they could try to throw something in there. Now, I don't think there's any MP3 player that is hackable to the point where it can do something particularly damaging.
Well, the thing is on that, and BitTorrent does try to protect that, it does an MD5 hash on the file. The torrent file contains a hash, so I guess you could spoof the torrent file.
Right.
But you, if you're going to, if you come to twit.tv, well, not today, but in general, if you come to the site that is providing the file and you download the torrent from that site, unless they've done some sort of man-in-the-middle attack or they've or they're spoofing my site, I guess maybe I should, you know, maybe I should get a certificate for twit.tv, and then you would know you were on twit.tv. I'll do that. I'll make sure that does that. That's one way of validating that that's twit.tv that you're on.
Has anybody here?
Also,
I was going to say, has anybody here ever, I know people who have downloaded, you know, been downloading applications and managed to get some really nasty spyware on their systems. Anybody here run into any kind of spyware on a download they've taken off of?
If you go to Kazaa or LimeWire, you're going to get it.
Well, my cousin, who I built a system for, he ended up installing a ROM pack full of games, and within that ROM pack was a very, very evil adware-based system that was, the removal of it was so convoluted.
It's hard to get rid of it once you get it. Those things, they're
That's
just,
right, a ghost image, and I was like, thank you, let's just drop the DVD right in and re-image this thing right now.
What were you going to say, David?
Oh, I was just making the simple comment that, you know, people seed the stuff that they like. I mean, if you find something that's seeded so many thousand times or even so many hundred times, I would assume, be vigilant, scan it, but I mean...
Good point.
And if you see multiple versions of a file in your wherever you're looking at different torrents, see which torrent is the most active as well. So
I would
say
of all,
usually people swarm to the quality file.
That's David saying. If there's a lot of seeds, you're safer. I would say of all the peer-to-peer file sharing systems, torrent is by far the least likely to give you any bugs. I mean, Kazaa and LimeWire, you're going to almost always get something. But not on BitTorrent.
Well, you're saying with the installation of the application.
No. Not even the applications. Just when you, if I'm a spyware author and I want to spread my spyware far and wide as possible, I'm going to look at what the number one song is in the nation right now. I'm going to create a file that looks like that song. You know, Madonna's big hit .mp3.exe.
Right.
And I'm going to put it out. I'm going to make sure it's on all the file sharing networks. And a lot of people are going to download it and run it. But that's not how torrent works. You know, you'd have to go to their site and download their torrent. I mean, that's not going to happen. So I think I wouldn't worry about BitTorrent. In fact, I'm very happy. If it weren't for BitTorrent, I don't think we'd have half the listenership we do.
Mm-mm.
More than, you know, 3/4 of the downloads are from BitTorrent of this file.
It's good. I'm more concerned about malicious websites.
Yes.
Doing things to your system.
Right.
It's
so.
Just one bad site with the right browser. Boom. You're reinstalling Windows.
Hey, we're out of time for this particular episode of This Week in Tech. Let's thank all of our gang here. Robert Herron from San Francisco, PC Magazine's brilliant HDTV lab guy.
Woohoo!
Mr. Yoshi, who is making special effects, like making copies. and apparently has something to do with Spider-Man 3. Hey, did you guys see Batman Begins yet?
No, I haven't. Everyone I've talked to said it's amazing, the best one yet. So I got to see it.
I was bummed.
They have it on the IMAX theater here in San Francisco.
I was bummed.
I want to go see
it. It's on the IMAX screen in Toronto. I bought a ticket online, and then I got caught up in something, and I missed it. And I was bummed.
I was supposed to be there right now seeing it, and I'm doing my TwitCast.
I was editing the TwitCast, and that's the price you pay for fame. Mr. David Prager, we don't hear enough from you. Please don't be a stranger now that you're part of the system gang.
Will do. Thanks very much.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're moving up here because I think most, this works great. I mean, having Patrick in the same room is great. And I think the more that we can be together when we do this, the better. So.
Yeah. And everybody's, yeah, like, a lot of people moving north.
Yeah. The looks like San Francisco Bay Area is once again the happening place. Yeah. We're reuniting the Screensavers cast bit by bit. Thank you, everybody, for your time. Have a great week. We'll see you next week on This Week in Tech. That's it for Episode 10 of This Week in Tech. Thanks for joining us. If you have a question for the Twits, leave voicemail on our Skype address. That's This Week in Tech. Or you can call or fax 206-339-TWIT. Or email us a wave or MP3 to questions at thisweekintech.com. Remember, our website is thisweekintech.com. If you want to make a contribution to keep the show flowing and going and commercial-free, press the PayPal buttons on the right-hand side of the page. We appreciate your support. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on This Week in Tech.
See this little Garrett office.
This is the Twit office.
This is epic.
It is a Garrett, isn't it?
Are you in Petaluma?
Yes, I can see the McNair building from the window. It's quite lovely. Oh. It's like all this greenery and very relaxed people are occasionally
the only thing is,
on the sidewalk.
This is the hot room in the whole building because I'm generating all this heat.
It's basically a Victorian office. Somebody converted a Victorian, a sort of a shambling Victorian house.
Did you see this?
Your editorial chairman's award.
My chairman's circle award.
I wanted one of those so bad.
You never won one?
Never won one.
Patrick, you can have that one. It may say Leo Laporte, but Patrick, it really
no,
has your
it's
name.
Yours. I didn't earn it. So the chairman's circle award was the award for editorial excellence, editorial excellence or sales excellence at Ziff Davis back in the day.
This is history. And you know, the story about this is Bill McCrone designed this on a computer, and then this made out of, I think, titanium.
No.
No?
That's an expensive. That would be an expensive.
That would be really expensive.
Titanium.
Well, what is that, steel? He had it. Patrick's licking it, ladies and gentlemen.
I would
lick it if I were you.
We're not recording this, are we?
Yeah, we are.
This is what gets played in the crowd.
This is the banter that you hear so
much
about.
If this makes airtime, I will burn your house to the ground.